This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
I'm Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for August the 12th, episode 1493. This episode is brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products. Well, we have a special show planned for you today. Jennifer and I are on our way to the Philadelphia ADA, the American Equestrian Trade Association show. It's the trade show we attend twice a year. And Jamie had the opportunity this week to sit down and ask Monty Roberts some listener questions, and I have compiled them into an episode for you today. We will get to Jamie and Monty in just a minute, but first I wanted to remind you of a couple of things. One, Monday we'll be live from ADA in Philadelphia with a whole bunch of new products you will see coming to tack shops soon. The ADA shows are always a ton of fun and very popular. Plus, we will be doing some Facebook Live over the weekend. We'll be putting them up on the Horses in the Morning Facebook page, so keep an eye on that for some videos coming. And we'll also attempt to video using Facebook Live the show on Monday so that you can see the products that we were talking about. And the second thing is, we won't have any really bad ads today, but get your ads in for next week. And remember, if you record the ad yourself on your phone and send us a sound file, you get two entries in for the prize for the month. And we do have a great prize for the month. It's our Total Saddle Fit Stretch Tech Shoulder Relief Girth worth $200. This is a girth that is set in the foundation, rooted in the ultra-effective shoulder relief girth, and it brings a next level of intuition to functional girths. You can see more details and learn why this is the most technologically advanced girth ever. Just go to TotalSaddleFit.com and look for the Stretch Tech Shoulder Relief Girth worth $200. I tell you, this thing is really cool. Reese and Philip both use it and love it. So we can't wait to get a hold of one here so that Nigel can give it a try too. That's the Stretch Tech Shoulder Relief Girth worth $200. So get your entries in now to really bad ads. Now on with the show. Here are a couple of recordings Jamie did when she sat down with Monty Roberts to ask him listener questions. She sent me all the separate files, and I've kind of stitched them together for you into a show. A big thank you to Monty for taking the time to do this. He cares so much about the horses, and I'll tell you what, he's 80 years old and still out there doing it, and he's all doing it for the welfare of the horse. And I think you'll see that come through here. We'll see you live on Monday from ADA.
Well, I am honored to be sitting in the office of Mr. Monty Roberts, and I get to ask him your listener questions. So we will just fire away. These are all questions, Monty, that were submitted by listeners, men and women, actually. And whatever, you know, let's be honest, be real, give it to them. Just let them have it. Okay. So the first question comes from a guy named Alex, and he says, "My horse bucks on the trail when I'm galloping with others. What can I do?"
Well, there could be a lot of reasons for bucking on the trail while cantering with others. Probably the number one reason I can think of is too high energy. Potentially, it's a problem of sugars and carbohydrates in the food. With pent up energies, and when he's cantering, then he feels excited and he expresses himself with bucking. Could be tack with the girth that's stimulating him to buck. Could be a flank cinch that's too far back. When he canters, then it stimulates his flank area and he bucks. It's quite possible that it spreads over 8 or 10 different potential reasons why he bucks. One must then seek the advice of others that you have confidence in and ask them to watch and see what's going on. Look over your equipment, have them see your food schedule, nutritional schedule, and see if the horse is high on sugars and starches and all of those things. It's an individual effort to figure out this particular horse and why he's deciding to do this. One has to realize that bucking is a lot of work. It takes a lot of energy. And horses don't typically want to do it all that much. If you can give them a reason not to, they will generally accept the reason not to. But you do have to be specific about finding the reasons of that particular horse. If I saw videos of it, if I had some questions answered, I might be able to help better. But there would be nothing better than a good expert on site that could actually see and advise you as to why this horse bucks.
I was just informed that, by the way, this is not Monty Roberts' office. This is Pat Roberts' office. Monty has no office nor any say in the house in how it runs. The next question comes from Donna. How many times do you suggest to do join up after you succeed in doing it? Do you do it every time before you ride, once a week, or after three times, is there no need to ever do it again?
I get this question so many times, and I find myself answering it in the same way each time, which is probably a good thing. But in the book, the only textbook that I ever wrote, From My Hands to Yours, that book has a clear outline of what I suggest is the proper number of times and the age of the horse and the conditions under which you do join up. So that's the best. But I won't short circuit to that extent, but I do suggest that each person has this textbook because there will be other questions that are covered in there too. And it's a simple book with chapters or categories of each potential problem that one has. Four join-ups are generally sufficient for any horse, but the key is to live by the principles of join-up for the life of the horse. That is to say that you don't force them to do anything, that you don't just go grab them and take off and demand from them, that you let them be a partner in the relationship. And that means when you go in the stall, you wait for them for a second to step to you, and then you put your lead on and go out. Living by the concepts of join up. If you read the chapters on join up and the living with a horse, the educational value of each of the concepts that I have in the body of work that I call join up, then you'll understand this business of living with join up. Some horses require 8 or 10 join ups. That varies depending on the sensitivity of the horse and the attitude of the horse. And a lot of times it depends on the life of the horse before he met you, too.
And our next question comes from Teresa. And Teresa says that her horse paws when he's in his stall and paws when he's in the cross ties. What can she do to eliminate that?
Striking the ground or pawing is a sign of nervousness. It's not unlike, in many ways, cribbing or weaving in the box stall or loose box, depending on how you term it. So it's a nervous characteristic. If the horse is pawing in his stall, is it at feeding time? Is it when a lot of other horses are going through and creating nervousness within him? But do what you can to cause a tranquil environment for the horse while he's in the stall, and you will probably stop down the pawing. Also, don't feed the horse in the stall. You take the horse out of the stall, you put the feed in the stall, you bring the horse to the feed and the stall, and you'll stop a lot of these things, like territorial horses who get angry when you come with the food to the stall. It seems an oxymoron that they would be aggressive toward you when you're putting food in the stall, but that's their territory, and they're defending that territory. And pawing in the stall can be that. Pawing on the cross ties is often because they're stood there too long. You're not continuing to do the process of grooming and saddling and getting out of there. And they get nervous about it and they want to do something. So they start striking the ground or pawing. Also, look at your nutritional level. And are they full of sugars and starches, which bring up the energy and they have to do something? So striking the ground is one thing they can do. But take a hard look at nutrition. It's a big part of what any of us are, make up our personality, really. Kids full of candy, for instance, or, you know, nervous kids that have so much energy they're tipping the groceries off the shelf in the store, and that's sugars in the bloodstream. So be aware of each of these conditions and think yourself through a little bit.
Okay, well, the next question is from Abby, and Abby would like to know how to get her lazy horse to move forward more willingly and to move off of her leg.
Okay, that's good, because I often come back to this thing of Walter Won't Go. It's on the online university that we create, and Debbie is the shepherd of the online university. And Walter just wouldn't go. When you started to go toward the area where a horse would work in a menage or an outdoor arena type thing, he just hammered it down. He had a set of brakes that wouldn't quit. And I go through all the litany of things that I would do there, and it's quite effective. And he went off. He has an owner now, and he's beautifully trained, and they're happy with him. So it did work. It involves what we call pacifiers, or screen-like domes, half circles, domes that go over the eye of the horse like blinkers, but the whole eye is covered with a screen. And it's high tensile strength screen, in which it gives you the opportunity to tape the parts you don't want the horse to see, leave open the parts you do want the horse to see, and it's very effective. It involves that one. It's called a pacifier. It also involves the giddy-up rope, and it involves taking any sting out of the spurs, taping the spurs or putting rubber on the spurs or having rubber spurs. Nowadays, they make them with round balls on them and all sorts of spurs that are not painful. Sharp pain will shut a horse down so quick. The first few times, it might make him go really well, and you think that's okay, and then the harder you spur, the harder he stops and goes into the pressure, because horses are into pressure animals. So it's a kind of a complicated issue, this business of balking or barn sour or separation anxiety. All of those will produce a horse that just stops, maybe pops up in front, and he won't go forward. And in the online university, we call it Walter Won't Go, because we put a name on the horse called Walter. That isn't his name, but watch for those things. They are very effective in causing the horse to go forward that doesn't like to go forward.
And you can see that on MontyRobertsUniversity.com.
This Nutrition Minute is brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products, the company that simplifies your search for research-proven nutritional supplements at kppusa.com.
The horse that matters to you matters to Kentucky Performance Products. Managing horses can be challenging. Each horse's personality affects the way he behaves and reacts to the world around him. Horses with certain dispositions can be at higher risk for developing health problems than others. High-strung or excitable horses are easily stressed, but so is the timid, quiet warrior. Stressed horses are more likely to develop digestive upsets that lead to colic, diarrhea, and ulcers. Nalox Advanced was specifically developed to support a digestive tract that is under stress. It sustains proper pH levels, reducing the incidence of ulcers and hindgut imbalances, while simultaneously supporting the healing of damaged tissue. Nalox Advanced supports the complete digestion of starches and sugars and sustains populations of beneficial bacteria. Make life a little easier on your sensitive horse and start him on Nalox Advanced today. To learn more about the ingredients in Nalox Advanced, visit Kentucky Performance Products at kppusa.com.
This next question comes from Holly, and she wants to know why and how do the dually halters work, and how did they come about?
Well, the dually halter came about by an old man in Nevada that taught me how to take a rope and tie it around the horse's neck. and then to twist it so that it made a kind of a halter that was all from one length of rope. And so it came out one side of the horse's head, just on the side, on the cheek, and it got smaller. The whole thing got smaller when the horse resisted it, and it got bigger when the horse cooperated with it. So in actual fact, you could allow the horse to teach himself simply by, did you close your hand or did you open your hand? You give to him with an open hand and a smiling rope when he gets it right. And you close your hand and let it get tight when he does it wrong. And then he teaches himself. That is to lead forward, to turn, to cooperate, and to stand still, whatever it is that you're asking him to do. So off I go to England in 1989, and I'm doing these tours around, and they can't load horses, and I'm whipping what we call come-along. This old man called this a come-along. I've heard it later called a war bridle and all sorts of names on it, but it goes way back in time, and there's about five or six different ways to tie it where it comes out about the same. But anyway, these fellows would watch me load a horse that had 3 or 4 years of a history of not loading, and professionals trying and everything else. And then he would load. And they would look at that and say, can I buy your rope? Yeah, sure, you can buy my rope. And then what? What did they know how to do? Put it on. And so it's no good to them. They think it has special qualities or something. So I knew that I couldn't just leave ropes with people and say, learn to put it on. So I started fooling around with, how do you make a halter that would approximate the kind of action that the come-along gave you and had the qualities whereby people could just buckle it on like it was a halter, with a little more attention to fitting it so that it fits nicely. And that's how the Dooley halter came to be. In fact, Debbie's sons, my daughter's sons, went with me back and forth to the saddle maker that was helping me design this thing. And they just couldn't see how some little halter could make that much difference. And yet, that was nearly 30 years ago. And it's made a huge difference in the horse industry, and certainly a huge difference in my training since we developed the Dooley halter. And the Dooley halter is less demanding than the come along, just the rope. It's quite a bit less demanding, but that's good for the novice horse person, because the rope itself could get them in trouble in that the horse gets violent against it in the early stages of teaching them, where the Dooley halter gets very little of that. And there are things about it that you have to be careful with. In other words, like you don't tie it up with the training ring, because if they do pull back, it just keeps getting tighter and horses are into pressure, so they can fall down and hurt themselves. So you don't tie up with that, and there's a warning label right on it. But if you use it properly, and it comes with a video, and I don't know, these days now they want to get rid of the DVDs just after I learned to use those. It used to be videotapes. And so they stay ahead of me, technically. But now Debbie says that you just have a thing on them that says go to, and they go to their computer, and you go to a certain spot, and then you see all the directions on the use of the Dooley halter. But it's an amazing piece of equipment that we just had a clinic here this week, and we had some wild horses that were seen to respond to the Dooley halter very quickly, you know, leading the second day they went in to a pen as untouched horses. And then we saw some horses taught to stand still that it worked beautifully on. One horse couldn't be clipped, and in a very short period of time, he was standing to be clipped. And another one that the farrier couldn't pick up feet without his jumping away and being very obstreperous about the shoeing process, and ended up with the line on the ground and one man in the round pen with him, picking up all 4 feet, tapping and rasping on them, all in, 2 sessions or 3 sessions of about a half hour each. So the dually halter is an incredible first line of training techniques with those horses, particularly from the ground manners aspect of training.
All right. Well, this next question comes from a person named Jamie. We're not going to explain any more about that. Do you treat mares and geldings the same? And generally speaking, what differences can you expect in the training of mares versus geldings?
Well, first of all, the first part of that question is, do I treat them any differently? And I have to tell you that I often work with horses and I get halfway through my work and say he or she, and somebody says, no, it's a she instead of a he. And, you know, I treat them the same way. But by the same token, do fillies or mares act different from geldings? And the answer is yes, they typically do. Mares will often require shorter sessions and have a shorter tolerance level. And pretty soon they say, look, that's enough of that. I'm going to get angry if you don't stop for today, take it up tomorrow, or I'm going to kick you in the teeth. And then you know it's a mare, it's a female. A gelding will tolerate a lot more time, a lot more request, a lot more work. They'll just keep plugging along because they're less sensitive. Then you go to the stallion, and he's a bit different too. And I noticed that you didn't say stallion in this, but typically in my work, I have to work with all three. And the stallion is a little more like the filly in that regard, but the tendency of a stallion will be to stand up to you when he's a bit tired of whatever lesson you're trying to get through to him with. But just put it in your book that fillies are generally less tolerant of lengthy works, so you shorten up your sessions. Geldings you can keep working on. And if you hear about somebody getting kicked on a pleasure ride out through the hills with a group of people that are just riding on a trail somewhere, it'll probably be a mare that kicked them, because mares are required to protect their anatomy more than geldings are. They're protective of their body. And you can't really blame them for that. That's what they are. They nurture young horses. They are more sensitive. And they protect their body more diligently than a gelding will.
Let that be a lesson to women everywhere.
Yeah.
Protect your anatomy.
Yeah. And you can see the similarities in human beings with all of this. And it's the reason why my horses called willing partners horses are all geldings. I don't use any females in the willing partners program, because most of my horses will go for pleasure people who are Freizeit, they say in Germany, or riders for pleasure riders, and they go in groups out riding through the nature and stuff. And if there's a kicking going on, it's likely to be a mare that kicked somebody or kicked another horse. So we use geldings in the willing partners program only, and no stallions. And I do not believe that it's fair for any rider to take a stallion in a group of horses for a leisure ride somewhere through the countryside. You just don't do it. I know there's people that say, oh, my stallion is perfect, he's never done a thing wrong, and it's okay. No, it's not okay, because nature is still there, and you can't blame the horse for acting on nature. But if your horse is perfect and remains perfect and never causes any problem, you're giving a bad example when you take a stallion, an entire horse, on a pleasure ride. So I'm pretty adamant about that.
Okay, the next question is from Hannah, and she wants to know, how can you control, or can you control, an overly aggressive gelding with the other horses in the pasture, like a very dominant horse?
Yeah, just imagine if he'd have been left an entire stallion, how he would have been. But those are the entire stallions that go on to be the leader of a herd if they were just wild horses. They become the breeding stallion. Sometimes they're smaller than the other horses, and you look at them and you say, how does he rule this place? But they rule through a psychology of battle. It's just them. That's what they are. They are alpha. And just because you take the testicles out does not mean that the reduction of testosterone in the blood is the simple answer to whether this horse is going to be the alpha horse. So those geldings that have had their testicles removed and there's no trace of testosterone in their blood may still be dominant individuals out there in the field that, for all the world, they seem like a stallion. And some people say, oh, he's proud cut. Well, you could do a blood test on him. If he has testosterone, it means they left too much cord on one of the testicles, which allows for testicular tissue to be producing a little testosterone. But that's often not the case. It's just an alpha horse that is out there, and he's the top of the line. And sometimes fewer horses are injured that way because everybody lines up then. If the leader of a group in the field is a bit vague about whether he's the leader or not, you can often get more injuries that way because somebody's always testing him and then there's battles. But the horse that really takes over and is the superior individual in the field will often not have to have a battle at all. It's not very different with people, really. If you go to a school where there's a huge big bully, he doesn't have to have many fights because nobody wants to fight him. So that's just the nature of our precious animal called equus. And we need to learn to live with those idiosyncrasies that are natural in the makeup of equus, the horse.
Okay, and the next one comes from Kara. My thoroughbred will walk onto the trailer no problem every time. However, once he is on the trailer, he begins to lose his mind, stomping, calling out, adrenaline pumping, and it can be very scary. How do I help him feel more calm in trips in the trailer?
Okay, so here we have this horse, and we need to know, is his issue with the trailer a balance issue? Is he afraid of it moving? Does he lose his equilibrium when you're traveling? Are the stalls too narrow? Does he just simply need company in there with him? Remember that horses are herd animals. And that means they like company. They like other horses around them. And you stick them in a trailer with walls on every side and nothing natural about it at all. And you put them in there and you expect them to stand and just look out that window for whatever length of time it is that you're going to make this trip. Sometimes it's unreasonable to ask a horse to do that because his nature is, I need a herd. I need horses around me. I feel very uncomfortable when I'm in here all by myself. Now, it doesn't even have to be a horse. I remember one time when I gave advice to a trainer. He was at Del Mar at the time. And I'll shorten this story up for you, but it involved a horse that could make money if you could ship him around the United States and hit races here and there because he preferred the turf and he preferred certain conditions and distances that meant that he had to travel because they only had like one race per meet for him in his particular division. And he wouldn't travel. He wouldn't go on an airplane at all. That awful place in there, and he was falling down, and you couldn't afford to ship two horses with him. But right outside of his stall, I noticed that the trainer had a parrot, and the parrot sat on a perch there outside of the horse's stall all day. The parrot lived in the office at night, and the horse was fairly tolerant of the parrot being in the office during the night. But during the day, he wanted that parrot right there. And I watched as he went to the racetrack, did his work. He hurried back and kept looking for his parrot. And then when he went in, he'd put his nose out and the parrot would scratch his head on the horse's nose. And they had a thing going, these two. And so I suggested that he try to take the parrot with him on a trip. And do you know the parrot had to have a special license to travel around because of the agricultural quarantine on exotic birds and things like that. But they got him his blood tested and everything, and he had his passport. And that horse shipped all over, and I think he won almost $1 million shipping to Canada and Florida, then New York and California, and all over the United States, even Seattle. And once he had the parrot with him, he was as quiet as a lamb. So speaking of a lamb is often a good traveling partner for a horse. They're small. They don't cause a lot of trouble. You can teach them to stand with a collar on, so when you get to the horse show or the ride or whatever, you can tie them up to the trailer. And some small animals, even up in the manger of the opposite side of the trailer, will do for company for the horse. A goat. But they have to become involved. There has to be an affair with these horses, a binding, a love affair with the horse and whatever animal you use. So you need to have that horse at home and then get your animal, your partner animal, bonded to the horse, and then you can go anywhere. That's if it's a herd issue. If it's a balance issue, that's another thing, and that requires a wide stall or hauling on a 45-degree angle to the line of travel. That's extremely important in the case of some horses.
This question is from Shannon, and she said that my horse gapes her mouth open when I ride in a halter or with the bridle on loose or tight reins, light or mild pressure. She gapes her mouth open. Why does she do that, and how can I fix it?
Wow. Once in a while you run into a unique question that's never been asked before. I have never heard of a horse that gaps or gapes the mouth open riding with a halter. That just doesn't make any sense at all. There is no plausible answer to a horse gapping or gaping the mouth open when you're riding with a halter, apart from some physical problem within the dentition of the horse or within the lingual areas, the tongue, the teeth of a horse. You have to go get an examination there. I can't imagine the benefit to a horse of opening its mouth with a halter on while riding, unless it's something physical inside that is bothering the horse at a time when there's pressure around on the head. So you'd want to check that one out. If it's a bit that they don't like, you get gapping of the mouth, that's for sure. Then we talk about changing the bit and having various instruments that will help you there. I am not in for these flash nosebands and figure eight nosebands where you tie the mouth shut. I really don't think that that's fair to a horse at all. And that if we are good horsemen and we ride properly and we do not use heavy hands, that the horse will keep their mouth closed because it's more comfortable to keep the mouth closed. So generally, gapping of the mouth is human error, but I'm interested in this business of if I ride my horse with a halter, it gaps the mouth. That will require potentially some good veterinary assessment, exploring the possibility that there's something wrong inside the mouth.
All right. Well, the next question comes from Angela, and Angela would like to know, she says, once you know a horse is afraid of a certain obstacle, in my horse's case, ditches, I'm assuming she's an eventer, what is the best way to start over? I see lots of articles on how to introduce a horse to new things, but not much on how to overcome an already pre-existing fear.
Yeah, interesting. The best thing that I've seen in terms of a horse that doesn't want to negotiate ditches. I had a horse in England that was really bad, and this horse was talented. He was an eventer that could win big time, but a ditch, you're out. He's through. And that business of the ground leaving him, a dark spot occurring, he doesn't know where the bottom is, or whatever is going through his mind, that was enough. And I thought this through one night. I remember it very well. And then I simply got a gelding from one of my instructors that was just a normal horse. And he was, they did a lot of this thing called Le Trek with him, which is a kind of a trail course at speed kind of thing. And they go into natural areas and create these courses. And he would go through a ditch fine. He would hop the bottom of it and stuff like that. And so I got those two horses to like one another. And we started with some little ditches. And there's a guy in Lambourne, England, that is a contractor. And he drove by this particular property where the horse was each day with a backhoe and stuff. And he was doing work around there. I don't know. And I had him come and do a little ditch and then a little bigger ditch and then a little bigger ditch until I could take this pony that the instructor had and go in front of him, and he would follow this pony through the little ditch. And then the little ditch got a little bigger and then a little bigger and a little bigger. And within about 4 or 5 days, he was jumping a massive ditch, but the pony was on the other side. So they went off to an event, and now it's a new ditch in a new place. And boy, did he want to stop. That is to say, in the morning, they give you a chance to go around the cross-country course. It was in an informal kind of competition. But we had that chance. So then this big ditch, the little pony couldn't do it. Or it was difficult to do, and he wasn't that big. But I put him on the other side. And my horse jumped the ditch a couple of times. And then in the afternoon for the regular course, he was flying over the thing. It worked well. It's company, following the company, and seeing that it's safe. Typically, you have a business whereby the ditch falls away from their lower vision of their eyes, and they see it as nothing but a trap that they're going to get killed in, and they stop. So getting them with a buddy and then being incremental about your uplift to the challenging facts surrounding whatever it is. And let's don't just say ditch, the water, big heavy poles, down tree, big log, all of those things that event horses have to negotiate every time they go can be helped tremendously by a gelding that's quiet and nice and goes through anything, and then gradually uplift and send your gelding to the other side and have him cantering away on the other side, and he'll draw that horse across almost anything. They'll give it a try. And then once they see that it's okay, you're off and running.
Wonderful. Okay. All right. So I'm about to get up and leave, and Monty says he has a question for me.
Yeah, I have a question for you. Last year you came here with a horse called Thor, and you still have Thor. And you told me that Thor was trying to run away with you each time you cantered, and he just sort of tended to go too fast, and he bolted forward, and you could control him and you could stop him, but it wasn't comfortable that he just rolled along.
This is what I brought him with this week. Yes. So the bolting away was last year. And then this year, yes, it's the canter transition where he blasts off.
Yeah. So tell me what I told you to do and how it worked.
Okay. I have done my homework. What you told me to do was to pick up the canter on the rail in the big arena. And when he blasts forward, say I pick up the right lead, when he blasts forward, make a teardrop kind of half circle to the right and stop him at the fence and make the make him realize that the canner doesn't have to be explosive, and that it's going to kind of, I don't know. I'm assuming that the reason you would do that would be to help me stop him, number one, but also to make him realize that there's nowhere to go.
There's nothing in it for him.
There's nothing in it for him. Perfect.
It's a job. And he has to go through this. And why would he blast off then? So he started to relax.
So you don't know the answer to the question because you told me to do it, but I haven't discussed it with you for those who don't know. I may cry because I did the homework. And I ended up just kind of going corner to corner, really, in more of an arc. And I took him out to the racetrack yesterday, and I cantered him around with no hands.
Absolutely.
So it was pretty awesome. So
yeah, and Jamie, the thing is that people go through this all the time, and then they throw them away. These horses lose their lives because they keep having behavior like that. And they say it's all the horse. And it's not the horse. The horse is doing a natural thing. But it's that we haven't found what they need. And I said, leave your hands down. Let him make the mistake. And then he has to work for it. Circle around, stop, walk. Do it again, circle around, stop, walk. And pretty soon he says, you know, it isn't comfortable here. I'm doing too much work, so I'll just go slower. But if you just tug and pull and fight with him, it's an arm wrestling match, and he'll keep doing it, and then you'll throw him away. You'll get another horse, and he'll end up in Mexico. Really, every horse is savable, practically, and every human needs to learn how to meet the needs of their horse.
And create an environment in which your horse wants to learn. And yeah, that is such a general theme of the farm and your concepts, because I created an environment for him to want to try to figure out what I wanted. And I didn't know how to ask him to slow down aside from having a dang wrestling match or doing tiny little circles. And just the simple canter into the and circle back to the fence and stop. And then I backed him up one or two steps, and then I went the other way and I cantered him around, and I took him out to the track, and I tied my reins up, and I videoed it. Actually, it's on Facebook, and I have no hands. Oh, there's the video of me galloping Thor around the track. And he's not galloping. I actually was kind of squeezing him to go forward because he was just loping along happily.
Canter.
Yeah. So anyway,
yeah.
Thanks.
You know, and the thing is that how do you think I feel when I sit down and watch another clinician talk about how hard to pull, or to pull their head down between their front legs, or to use sharp spurs, or give them a good whack? How do you think I feel when this is the answer? And I've produced 11 world championships with these concepts. It isn't just for the namby-pamby people who love their horse and don't care about what the horse does. There's discipline involved, and the discipline happens to be nonviolent. I know I'm talking to an audience that loves their horses, and I know that many people who do love their horse and or horses are conflicted these days by a myriad of concepts and beliefs out there. And that's good. That is good. We have more ways to learn today than we've ever had in the horse industry. As I was growing up, the good ones didn't want to tell you what they were doing anyway, because we were in competition together. But if you're working with your horse, please have the mindset of meeting your horse's needs and causing the horse to want to do what you're doing, as opposed to forcing the horse to do it. And don't yield. Don't give in to those people that would tell you, just give him a whack, or, you know, put a bigger bit on and pull harder. And those kinds of extrinsic or forceful things to train a horse. Don't do it. The absence of violence will get you a lot further, and you'll be a lot happier doing it. It isn't fun to be violent with your horse, believe me. And I've grew up watching violence with horses right through my childhood. And I now know that it's so much better and so much more fun to do it without violence, and it's more effective too.
And that's what I've learned by being here is just from last year to this year, is it changes your mindset when you think, okay, how can I come up with a way to do this that is not going to stress me out, not going to stress the horse out, not going to make him mad or me mad or me scared? You know, when you're standing there and there's a person who has shown you on their TV show that you have to whip to this side of the horse and whip to this side and hit the horse and then rub it off and all that nonsense. That's not fun for me. And that's not fun for my horse. And that's what I've enjoyed so much about learning all of Monty's concepts is it's the nice, happy way. It's the vegetarian way of training horses. it's the friendly way. And it's a way that you actually have to use your brain and kind of, I like to call it think horse. You got to kind of think horse and say to yourself, what would Monty do? It's almost like I should have a bracelet that says that. Oh, wait, I do. thanks for the bracelet, Abby. But anyway, it's life changing. So I just, thank you so much for the opportunity to be here. And Debbie, you know, I love being a part of your show too. And thank you for having me out.